McGraw-Hill Ascent Audio presents Communication Essentials, the tools you need to master every type of professional interaction, by Trey Gwynn, narrated by Derek Dysart. Publisher's note: this audiobook has bonus material. Please contact whomever you purchased this audiobook from to request the material. All assessments referenced in this audiobook can be found in the bonus material. Preface. No matter how broadly my professional network expands, what I observe about humans and how we can enhance our communication effectiveness remains mostly constant. From the first-generation college student in a speech course to the university president rehearsing a commencement address, from the MBA student preparing for interviews to the senior product manager prepping for a difficult conversation, and from the physician who is developing a bedside manner to the CEO prepping for the next earnings call. The faces change, the situations are unique, but important for each of us is understanding and learning to master the communication essentials. If you are looking for a list of fast facts, search the internet and you will find many sources wrapped in clickbait waiting for you. But be forewarned. Mastering communication doesn't work like that. Instead, communication is kind of like running. You can't read a web page on running and then win the Boston Marathon. You have to dig deep and do the work. Fortunately, the work can be fun. If you're looking for an engaging book that's designed to support you on the pathway toward enhancing your communication effectiveness, you've come to the right place. This book has been written for you, no matter your age, location, or vocation. In Part 1, The Essentials, I invite you to explore essential elements of communication and to be introspective with yourself as a communicator. In Part 2, The Essentials Applied, I provide an easy-to-remember framework for how to apply and eventually master the communication essentials. In Part 3, Beyond the Essentials, I give pro tips for navigating a variety of professional communication scenarios. Let's get started. Part 1, The Essentials. Chapter 1, Be a Communication Student for Life. I'm writing this chapter early on a Tuesday morning, a fact I first learned when the friendly hotel staff gave me a courtesy wake-up call. After placing an order for some coffee and fruit, I do some journaling on my iPad. Next, I listen to my audiobook while knocking out some emails and other urgent messages, followed by FaceTiming with my family to wish my kids an enjoyable day at school. Next up, I'm meeting a friend who lives in town for a morning jog and quick bite at his favorite breakfast spot. Then it's a 90-minute presentation to a group of people I have yet to meet, followed by lunch with the event coordinator and a series of Ubers and plane rides to get me home. For now, it's only 6 a.m. Pacific time and I'm still alone in my hotel room, yet communication has and will continue to fulfill my day. Your day may look similar or quite different from mine. However, I am certain that one thing is the same. We both communicate a lot more than we even realize. Some of us have the awareness that we can and should always be improving ourselves as communicators. Whether formally, informally, or without even knowing, we are all students of communication. This is not merely because we receive many inputs of information each day communicated to us in myriad ways. But also, like a snowball rolling downhill, each of us can take our everyday experiences as means for increasing our understanding and abilities as communicative beings. As a dedicated student of human communication, I strive to do my best in making good sense of the subject, stewarding the discipline, and passing the torch well. Hence, this is not the first book on communication, and it will not be the last. As long as there are communicators who communicate, there will always be more to say about communication. This is partly because of humans' enduring fascination with and connection to the subject matter. Specific topics and titles span from how to find the right words to inspire your team to knowing what to do when there are too many ways to communicate at work. The last three articles I read on communication taught me 7 tips for how to nail a hybrid presentation, the delicate art and science of savvy self-promotion, and 3 strategies for how to ask for help at work without alienating your coworkers. This content wouldn't be produced for a non-existent audience, so it's clear there's a real craving for insights that can help us thrive at work and beyond. Though each of us has communicated our entire lives, we are all aware that we can do it better. We have varying ways of discovering and sharing communication knowledge, skills, and abilities. This book is one such effort. So is coaching a child to be attentive, listen actively, and demonstrate respect when interacting with teachers. So is recommending that a friend wear a blazer and smile more during an interview. Each of us plays a part in the communication learning journey, and the learning should never stop. That is partly because as much as we evolve as a species, so too do the ways in which we communicate. When I arrived at college in fall 2000, our residence hall had a landline at the front desk that students would use to call home, request a meeting with their professor, or make plans with someone from across campus. Few people owned a mobile phone. Faculty and students were still making sense of this new thing called email, and some were a bit wary of using it. Fast forward 20 years, and my elementary-aged daughter FaceTimed me while writing to ask for my password to download some interactive iPad game that all her friends have. Indeed, communication has been and continues to evolve at lightning speed. And rather than assume innovative technology diminishes old ways of thinking, I find that a return to the fundamentals is necessary for making sense of communication in our modern world. In fact, I find that the communication theories I studied as a doctoral student have become all the more fascinating and informative as the days pass, situations change, and technology disrupts. For this reason, a return to the essentials is, well, essential. Every chef has essential tools and spices. Every artist knows that new colors come from a sophisticated understanding and effective use of primary colors. Likewise, savvy communicators understand that no matter how much things change, you must remain grounded in the communication essentials. This point is one I regularly consider when being contacted for corporate speaking engagements. The requests for communication experts are ever-changing. The top-of-mind issues change, but the foundations of communication don't. As a recent case in point, in 2020 and 2021, nearly every request I received involved some angle of diversity, equity, inclusion, or DEI, and all of them required virtual delivery. Prior to that, the most frequent request was for in-person workshops on topics such as how to communicate like a leader or how to communicate executive presence. What is certain is that any change in the environment or evolution in technology will change the nature of the invitation I receive. For example, we really need someone who can help our people figure out how to present effectively using Zoom, Microsoft Teams, or whatever comes next. There are countless examples of how an organization may frame its need for an expert to come teach on communicating given the jargon of the day or en vogue technology. But no matter the jargon or technology, a large amount of what we must learn stays the same. We have goals as communicators, and we need some help figuring out how to best achieve them. Whether it's Abraham Lincoln delivering the Gettysburg Address or the guy next to me on the plane snapping a picture of his coffee to tweet about how bad it tastes, human communication is about people sending and receiving messages to convey meaning and accomplish goals. Now, trust me, a few scholars in a room could debate ad nauseam over the particulars of the previous sentence, but the general idea will remain. In fact, it can be summed up even tighter. Communication is about messages and meaning. The role of visuals in communication. The power of visuals in the meaning-making of messages can't be underscored enough. Some visual messages are static, while others are dynamic. A stop sign is red and octagon-shaped, and its meaning is indisputable. When you see a stop sign, you must stop. But other symbols are more dynamic, and the associated message may take on a different meaning in a given context. An irate driver extending a middle finger to oncoming traffic is a message with a very different meaning from a college student playfully giving the finger when his best friend beats him at a game of pool. Visuals also help to emphasize a verbal message. The words, "Oh, I just love you," take on a completely different meaning when accompanied by a rolling of the eyes and a sarcastic smirk versus a sincere smile and happy cry. Indeed, there are many nuances and even challenges when constructing the meaning of verbal messages. Without the benefit of context clues or nonverbal behaviors to make the point, we are left to interpret verbal messages as we best understand them. Relying on the words alone can be problematic because much of what we learn about people's thoughts and feelings comes by observing their body language, including watching facial expressions and eye contact. Cultural and relational communication. Communication is also cultural and relational. In some families, hugs, kisses, or similar signs of affection are never exchanged. But in others, every hello, goodbye, good morning, or good night is reinforced with warm hugs, big smiles, and kisses. The communication norms, to hug or not to hug, within any given family or group can serve to express and perhaps reinforce the actual relationships. When we accommodate our communication style to align with the cultural and relational norms of others, we may be signaling respect and even desire to be part of that group. When we do not accommodate our communication style to the majority group, we may be sending the message that we do not understand or perhaps respect the group. If you are a hugger and enter a home insisting on hugging each member of a non-hugging family, it is possible they all will oblige and assume you mean well. Conversely, if you are a non-hugger and enter a home and refuse hugs from each member of a hugging family, they may assume that you think yourself better than them and wish to not be associated with any of them. Imagine if we switch the example to be about whether people engage in a professional handshake when meeting for the first time. Picture yourself with this in mind as you arrive for a job interview. What would it signal to you if you extended your hand to a hiring manager who clearly noticed yet refused your gesture to shake hands? Or how would you feel if your potential hiring manager greeted you at the interview with an extended hug and kiss on the cheek? Indeed, all around us, the cultural and relational nuances of communication pervade. My clients notice this most when making career moves because of the differences in teamwork, leadership style, and cultural fit at every company. Given this, new hires should make the time to learn about the people, the company culture, and how individuals interact with one another. New employees tend to pick up the paperwork and processes in their new jobs faster than establishing solid relationships with key stakeholders. Or they discover that it is nearly impossible to be effective at doing their jobs without relating well with the people. Thus, a smart 30, 60, 90-day onboarding plan will place appropriate emphasis on meeting and cultivating meaningful connections with the right people. Successful professionals understand that achieving high-level priorities and actionable goals is dependent on strong workplace relationships. Frames and perspectives. We've thus far established that communication is symbolic and requires meaning, and that messages and their meanings must be considered in the context of culture and relationships. Additionally, communication involves frames and perspectives. As communicators, we learn to interpret and understand communication in light of the given situation or context, the frame in which the communication occurs. Across the room from me is a painting my wife did last year. It's beautiful and has deep symbolic meaning to our family. It has a nice sturdy frame surrounding it. Both the framed canvas and wall it hangs on are painted, but when a dinner guest points to the wall and asks about the painting, I'm certain he or she is not referring to the white wall. I gather that the guest must only be referring to the artwork inside the frame. Now, imagine your life is that wall and holds framed paintings. The framed paintings represent relationships you have and groups you are part of. There may be similarities across the frames, but each is unique. Being attuned to communication frames helps people navigate interactions. For example, when I jog around my neighborhood and my neighbor stops me to ask, "Did you hear that last night?" I know for a fact he is not referring to the big news my sister called to tell me. Nor is he asking about my son who woke up crying in the middle of the night. I know that he is referring to the 5 seconds of bottle rockets that went off next door to me at around 9:30 p.m., when my very well-meaning neighbors were singing happy birthday in the driveway. I know this not because I can read his mind, but because it's the only logical frame of reference that this neighbor and I share. And because of that shared frame of reference, that is, being neighbors who happen to interact from time to time, I'm confident his perspective on the bottle rocket noise from the night before won't be positive, because he's mentioned previously that his pets are sensitive to loud sounds. This frame and perspective help me know how to navigate the conversation quickly so that I can politely exit and continue my run. Applied in the classroom, I constantly encourage my students to increase their effectiveness when talking with faculty by having them challenge their assumptions and reframe their perceptions. When a student considers the perspective of the faculty member and properly frames how to engage with him or her, that student may increase the likelihood of receiving the extension being asked for. Similarly, by intentionally considering the perspective of your manager and better framing the boundaries and assumptions of interacting with that manager, you may increase the likelihood of receiving extra time off, a desired project extension, the quarterly bonus, or more. Even if someone understands that communication is about messages and meanings within a cultural context, that person may fail to reframe and account for individual perspective. This is a guaranteed way to miss the mark as a communicator, and in some cases may even cause a person to lose a job. Imagine a manager and direct report who travel together for business. Over the course of travel on Monday, meals and drinks were shared and some personal stories were exchanged. They laughed together for the first time, established a stronger connection, and ended the evening feeling a bit closer. The next morning, they synced up downstairs in the hotel lobby and headed to the client site. On the ride over, feeling a bit closer to his boss from the day before, the associate jokingly admits being a tad bit hungover. Entering the client site, he gives a fist bump and tells his boss, "Let's do this." At lunch with the client later that day, when referring to his boss, he says, "Trust me, this guy has got some stories to tell." Fast forward a few days when they are back at headquarters and the boss calls his direct report in for a quick chat. He shares that next week they'll be traveling separately and he expects a higher level of professionalism from his protege going forward. This shows just how complex communication can be when it comes to relationships and how people frame their experiences and perspectives. These two did grow closer and friendlier during their travel day. But from the perspective of the manager, the subordinate was not supposed to carry their closeness and friendliness into the frame of workplace interaction. The key here is to understand that communication is about messages and meanings, which are better understood through cultural and relational context. And we should become adept at applying frames of reference and multiple perspectives when interacting with others and making sense of human interaction. Communication constants. These are but a few of the essentials to communication in everyday life that become even more, not less, valuable to us as society evolves and technology disrupts. This is partly because we are members of a global society who are constantly communicating across a variety of mediums. The exact example of the guy traveling with his boss may have just as easily happened 50 years ago before the onslaught of modern technology. But similar communication phenomena described in the story can happen just as easily today while messaging with your boss via smartphone one night and then joining for virtual calls together the next day. This highlights that as we stretch the boundaries of communication in some ways, a savvy communicator will remain grounded in the understanding of the essentials. Like a basketball player preventing traveling, you may spin or otherwise change position with one foot by leaning into a communication venture of your choosing, so long as your pivot foot does not move from its initial position or lose contact with the floor. In our case, that pivot foot must remain planted on the essentials of communication. Essential takeaways. At the end of each chapter, you'll find essential takeaways. These are the most important points you'll need to carry into your professional and personal lives to find lasting success. In this chapter, the essential takeaways are: while top-of-mind issues change, the foundations of communication don't. Communication is about messages and meaning, and humans communicate to convey meaning and accomplish goals. Communication is cultural and relational, and when we accommodate our own communication style to align with the cultural and relational norms of others, we may be signaling respect and even a desire to be part of that group. Chapter 2. Know why and how we communicate. Have you ever really thought about why you communicate? For a moment, forget other questions like when and how well you're communicating, and instead focus on the why. All of us have moments when we prefer to be alone, but can you fathom a life of solitude where you couldn't interact with others, either face-to-face or virtually? Think of the headlines during the pandemic about sadness, grief, and depression spiking as people tried to adjust to life in isolation and quarantine. Among many other lessons, the pandemic showed us just how much we crave interacting freely with others. Why? Because human communication touches many aspects of our lives, from our individual identity and daily needs to each and every experience with others. We are inherently social beings. It has long been argued we cannot not communicate. We instinctively turn to others for our socio-emotional health, and we suffer physically when denied the ability to interact with others. Communication helps us to accomplish our personal and professional tasks and goals. Considering even the simplest circumstances, like laundering clothes or getting takeout food, can you imagine accomplishing much of anything without some form of interaction, whether digitally, face-to-face, or a combination of both? Communication is how humans can achieve instrumental needs that may be big, for example, getting a job or earning a promotion, or small, for example, ordering a drink or getting called on during a meeting. Communication helps us maintain our physical and mental well-being and enables us to form and maintain our social and personal relationships. Aside from being born into a family or set up on playdates as a child, the quantity and quality of interactions we have with others is largely a product of if and how we communicate. As early as infants playing peekaboo with a parent and toddlers sharing toys on a playground, humans are refining their understanding of how connections with others are associated with the messages communicated verbally and nonverbally. Communication also helps us understand ourselves, including who we are and who we want to be, by enabling us to share our ideas and express our identities. As a case in point, consider how your attitude and attire may change in the span of any given day, or perhaps even within the hour. Within a month of living together, I could accurately identify the person my college roommate was talking to on the phone just by observing the way he carried himself and by paying attention to the sound of his voice. Many of us have predictable communication behaviors. What about you? What side of your identity do you show for a job interview? First date? What part of your identity do you perform when gathering with friends on a Friday night? Relatives over a holiday? Consider for a moment how you express these sides of yourself during various occasions, whether in how you dress, the ways you behave, or the things you choose to say or not to say. Actions, interactions, and transactions. Part of wrestling with why humans communicate requires properly considering the communication process. But even here, scholars have not always agreed. There are three basic models that show how our understanding of communication has evolved over time. The first, the action model, suggests that communication is a one-way process. In this view, one person says or does something that sends a message to the other or others. A text message sent that may be read. A voicemail left may be heard. An outfit worn in hopes of being noticed. These are all examples of communication as action. Going a step further is to see communications as an interaction, which implies communication is a two-way street and requires two or more individuals exchanging information. While leaving a voicemail or sending a message is an action, a phone call or rapid exchange of messages captures communication as an interaction. With time, scholars began to see these two models as quite limiting. Communication as an action, for example, serving a tennis ball, or interaction, for example, volleying a tennis ball back and forth, fails to explain how rich and dynamic communication can be. This led to the development of a third model, communication as a transaction, which seeks to explain how communicators are often sending and receiving messages simultaneously and constructing shared meanings or understandings together. Rather than seeing these models as good, better, and best, I encourage people to recognize that a given situation will naturally lend itself to be more adequately explained by a particular model. In order to better understand these different models of communication, let's use an example of a nurse conducting hospital rounds. If a patient says, "Nurse Davis checked my IV and then told me to push the button if I need something," it would suggest that the nurse treated their communication as an action. If that same patient says, "Nurse Johnson checked my IV, asked how I was feeling, offered me some water, and then reminded me to push the button if I needed anything," it may suggest that the nurse treated her communication with the patient as an interaction. And finally, if the patient reflects on the encounter and says, "Nurse Thompson checked my IV, we discussed my vitals and treatment plan, and then she reminded me to push the button if I need anything," it may suggest the nurse treated their communication as a transaction. The critical difference when it comes to understanding the distinction between an interaction and transaction is that an interaction can simply be exchanging messages without a relational component. Robots can interact. When we interact without a meaningful transaction occurring, we may say something like, "We talked about it, but I don't feel like I was heard or that we reached any sort of understanding." By contrast, when two or more participants create a shared meaning and understanding of information, rather than merely sending and receiving messages, this is a transactional model of communication. One challenge that even well-informed and well-meaning individuals face is knowing when and how to adopt a transactional model.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?